Hi, how are you? Can you believe this? Can you believe this? I'm actually back in my office with an actual microphone, not my Apple AirPods. I'm not going down the interstate right now. I'm actually sitting on the farm in my office, in my house, and we've got time today. I don't know when I'm going to release this, but this is for a little context. This is a Saturday. I'm recording this on a Saturday. And this is the first Saturday that I have not had to be somewhere, like to do something, to talk to someone, to do a wedding, to do an install, to do whatever in months and months and months. And I am not saying that to brag. I am not saying that to sound like I don't want your pity. I'm saying that so that I can take an opportunity to just reflect and to be present. And as much as I do this podcast and make these episodes and talk to these people to help and to learn and to give back, this also is for me. I do this for myself. This is a great way for me to walk through and talk through things and really fine tune our processes that we do and implement and have set here on the farm, just through, voice, just through being able to talk through something, and to share that with you is huge for me. So I am so glad and grateful and excited to be back. I know that I'll be able to record many things over the upcoming winter season. And who knows what next year holds? I'm not quite sure, but I'm not holding my breath either. But I will say that I know that today we're talking about succeeding with dahlia cuttings. And this episode was originally supposed to be released back in May, but as I'm sure many of you know, once we hit like the end of April, beginning of May, 2023, I like fell off the face of the podcasting earth. The only things that were being released were things that I had previously scheduled. I still have some episodes that are recorded that I was actually able to record this past winter that I never got scheduled before we got insanely busy here at the farm. So I will be releasing those in the next few weeks to make sure that that content gets out because there are some very really good episodes that I want to make sure that we're able to share with you. But the fun thing about today's topic of dahlia cuttings is this was something that I actually was able to talk about and present on at the ASCFG conference that was in St. Louis in the beginning of November. And it's also something that we do a lot of here and we have implemented into our production programs here on our farm. So I'm very excited. Before we break into kind of the meat and potatoes of the processes and the how-tos with dahlia cuttings, wanted to take a second to introduce myself. My name is Drew, and I own and operate Clara Joyce Flowers here in northwestern Illinois. We are a specialty cut flower farm that focuses on cut flower and foliage production during our main production season, wedding and event production, and also young plant propagation, which directly refers to today's topic. So that's a little bit about who we are and what we do. But with all of that said, I think we should get started. So I do want to kind of walk through this topic today. Kind of from the entire overarching process of dahlia cutting. So we're going to start like right from the tuber in the greenhouse on the propagation bench, and we're going to walk all the way through the entire production season and in ways that we can utilize rooted dahlia cuttings to beef out or bulk up our production plan and best serve our customers. So let's get started. The story of rooted dahlia cuttings really begins for us in late December, early January. This is when we're taking our mother tubers, so our mother stock of all of the varieties that we're going to be producing, and getting them going in a greenhouse. In order for us to do that, we're taking the clumps that we've dug out the prior fall, and they've been in storage. So we're going to be cleaning those, so removing the soil off of them, and getting them ready to go, just so that they're clean. The eyes are clearly visible, maybe broken down into halves or quarters if the clumps are large. I've learned to kind of disturb the eye zone as little as possible when it comes to having the intention of growing these tubers out as mothers for cutting production, because if we can impact that eye zone as little as possible, you could potentially have more unimpacted eyes for cuttings to be grown from. So that's a little tip and trick that we've learned over time. When we do have a variety that's prepped and cleaned, we're going to take an open 1020 flat. So a 1020 flat is a very industry standard black plastic tray. It's 10 inches by 20 inches and about 2.5 inches deep. And we need trays that have holes in them. And these holes are what is going to be the drainage. So we'll take a 1020 flat, fill it with soil, and then stand the mother tubers up in that soil. We really only need half an inch to an inch of tuber below the soil surface, just enough to keep that tuber stable so it's not going to be flopping around. And really the only reason we need that much soil contact is because the roots that are going to be feeding the tuber during the process of cutting production are going to come from the end of that cut tuber. The end of the tuber will produce feeder roots, which will grow down into that soil, and that those in time will provide anchor and nutrient supply for the plant, which is essentially the tuber, the original mother tuber. Once tubers are stuck, we're going to make sure that tray is labeled several times in case one tag falls out. Another one will be there to make sure that we don't jeopardize an entire tray of plant material for identification purposes. And then from there, it's going to go down to our propagation house. Over the winter time, we're not keeping our prop house. I should rephrase that. During this stage of the winter, we're not keeping our propagation house super, super warm. We want to make sure that like nighttime is around 50, 55. And then during the day, that might go up as high as mid to upper 80s. We will vent to the greenhouse or set a vent fan thermostat for kind of that mid to upper 80s region, just so that we don't have a ton of stress being put on the plants during the winter, because we don't have immense amounts or endless amounts of daylight hours over the winter. So we want to make sure that the growth that is being put on is slower, is more consistent, and isn't having to navigate or deal with the stressors of huge temperature swings either. So that's kind of how we regulate that temperature. We don't utilize heat mats. I'm going to be very transparent and honest with you. I've never used a heat mat on the farm. I've never bought one. I don't own one. And we have learned to navigate without that added cost. I know that there are people that swear by utilizing heat mats. And if that is a program and a process that works, then that's fantastic. But we don't do that here. So not saying it's right, wrong, or indifferent, but that's just our process. Once we have loaded mother trays or cutting stock in the prop house, it's usually a 2 to 3 week turnaround time before we start to see our first sprouts start to emerge. Once we start to see those first sprouts, that's when we're going to start to get our 128 trays prepped and loaded. 128 tray is, again, a very standard culture. It's a standard material that's around, and it's available in the industry. that is, again, has the footprint of a 10-20 tray. So it's 10 inches wide by 20 inches long. And within that footprint, there's 128 cells or individual holes. We're going to get that loaded with a fine grind media, whether it's a germination mix or some other media that works for you. I can tell you that we do utilize a germination mix for our rooted cuttings. And then we're also going to be writing or printing lots of tags. So for us in our process, in each mother tray, there will be usually 15 to 20 of this exact same tag stuck into that tray. So then as we're harvesting cuttings off of that, we can just grab a new tag every time we fill a flat. So we don't have to be constantly writing tags or have to be going up to the tag printer in the shop. It's just something that's prepped and it's stock and it's always there. When we are ready to, well, I should rephrase that or say that differently. We know that we are ready to start taking cuttings of dahlias when we have a sprout that is roughly 1 to 2 inches tall. I say that roughly, or I add that word roughly in there because height isn't the only determining factor for when a cutting is ready to go. What we want to see from a structural perspective is we want to see one true leaf formed with more on the way. So by the time that cutting has reached that maturity, or that sprout has reached that maturity state, it should have a nice stem started. There should be leaves visible, but we don't want it to be too big. When cuttings get to be 3 to 4 inches tall, it's really quite stressful on the cutting to be removed from the mother tuber, stuck into soil, and then have to rehydrate. So if we can begin that process when it's a little bit smaller, it makes it easier for that entire process to begin. When we have isolated or found cuttings that are in that kind of prime size, we're ready to harvest that cutting. A lot of times you'll see people use a scalpel or a snips or a knife to remove the cutting from the mother tuber. And I believe that is kind of the industry standard on a lot of large-scale production facilities that are producing millions and millions of cuttings. But we kind of learned that every time that you're utilizing a tool, that tool is also a vector. And we want to reduce the amount of vectors present when it comes to propagation, to kind of cut down on some of the cultural issues that we are noticing and experiencing in the dahlia industry. What this all kind of fancy stuff or words means is that when you cut into any plant, doesn't really matter what it is, there is going to be some DNA left on your tool or your implement, whether it's juices or fibers or water or whatever it might be like for that specific type of plant. When you cut from plant to plant, you are exchanging or introducing new DNA from plant to plant. The reason that matters is because when we're working with propagation or the topic of propagation, we want to reduce the amount of juice, for lack of a better word, going from plant to plant. And so when we are working with dahlia cuttings, which happen to be very water dense, and there is a high presence of juice that is left on vectors when you go from plant to plant, we figured out a way to just completely remove that vector, and that is by the act of snapping. So when we go to remove a cutting from a tuber, we're going to take our fingers and reach down to the base of the cutting where that green vegetative material meets the tuber, And we're just going to gently but firmly grab that cutting at the base and then snap it off in one kind of quick motion. That snapping is going to basically remove that cutting by not introducing a knife or a blade or any vector. It has worked quite well for several years. So that's how we do it. When we are in the process or in the act of that snapping or that harvesting time period or process, we're then going to be, you know, taking handfuls of cuttings and putting them into a bucket or a bag, some sort of transport item to then take us to the 128 trays. That are labeled and prepped and hydrated. You want to make sure that your soil is previously moistened so that you will have moisture at that cut zone on that cutting to kind of alleviate or help buffer some of the stress that that cutting is going to go through in the next 48 hours. Cuttings really, from this perspective, are very similar to cut flowers. Cut flowers or flowers growing on a plant before they're harvested are used to or accustomed to water and nutrients being taken up by roots. When we cut those off of the plant, they no longer have that root system. So that plant or that cut flower that we've harvested has to condition itself in that next 24 to 48 hour window to start to take water up through those exposed cells on the stem. Cuttings are no different, regardless of whether it's a dahlia or a mum or a spider plant or who knows what you're propagating, African violets. Once you remove that vegetative material, there is a period of time where that plant needs to relearn, basically. How to live, how to survive, and that window of time is quite crucial. We want to make sure that we've got very good airflow, so that there's not molds or things settling onto the leaf to kind of eliminate some of those stressors. We need to make sure that we have plenty of humidity in the air, plenty of moisture in the soil. And I say plenty of moisture and not wetness, because there is a difference between moist and wet. Before I had the actual propagation house here on the farm, I was doing all of our propagation in the basement of the house that I live in. And we were doing it all on rolling wire racks with grow lights. And it was quite a challenge for me to root cuttings in that system. Because every 128 tray had a solid bottom 1020 tray underneath of it. And that solid 1020 is where all of the excess water and moisture would accumulate. And when I was doing that, I had a really big issue with cuttings rotting because they were literally sitting in water. And that is not a great thing. So learning from that, dahlias and most cuttings in general, they do need good airflow as well in the soil itself. If your soil is waterlogged, your plant is going to, your cutting is going to have a little harder time producing roots and getting established as well. So once you've kind of made it through those first 48 hours, what you should expect to see during that time frame is you should expect to see some wilt, a very light wilt happening on some of the leaves. And then once you kind of move through that first 24, then you should start to see those leaves get turgid again. For us, we know that that first overnight period is really crucial. You know, if those cuttings don't have water over those that first night, it's going to slow them down. So again, watering very heavy once cuttings have been stuck, making sure they've got good soil contact. And that first overnight is when we really notice the hydration start to kick in. Because then by that next morning, the plant tissue is usually quite turgid, very, very sturdy, and that cutting is off to the races. It's got a good start on it. once you made it through that time frame, then you're in more of a maintenance mode. You need to keep an eye on the ambient humidity in the area so that you've got ample. You don't have big dry spots, and that'll make it easier on the leaves. If you are noticing continued wilt, throwing a piece of shade cloth over your cuttings is not a bad idea. I've even heard chrysanthemum growers say that on a tray of freshly stuck cuttings, they would put a single layer of newsprint and moisten that. That newsprint's going to keep that humidity localized at the cutting zone and also provide shade, which is very important if you're growing in a very intense situation. We know that when we are propagating large volumes of cuttings, we're just going to pull a big piece of shade cloth over that entire structure to keep that temperature a little lower, provide that element of shade, and just make it a little less stressful for the cuttings. I would say usually within 3 to 4 weeks, you should see really good rooting happening. You'll notice that as soon as the cuttings start to produce roots, they're also going to begin to produce new vegetative growth as well. So you'll see new leaves, you'll see stem elongation, things like that. Those are all really good signs. It shows you that you are doing a great job. And you'll also need to start feeding your cuttings very soon after that as well, because we know that when we're growing cuttings in a 128 tray, that 128 plug is quite small. It's an inch by an inch by 2 inches deep. And that's not a lot of media, and that's not a lot of nutrient. So we're going to start to add nutrients through the irrigation system. Very low dosage. We don't want to burn cuttings when they're quite small. That will help them tremendously. We will utilize just a general triple 20, or even a triple 10, greenhouse, fertilizer. And that usually does the job. If you were not wanting to use a, synthetic or a mineral base, you definitely could utilize, fish emulsion or seaweed extract or compost tea. All of those things would be lovely as well as a foliar feed. I should take one step back. I forgot one thing. We always get lots of questions on rooting hormone. Do we dip our cuttings? Do we not dip our cuttings? That is something that we kind of are in an ebb and flow with. Some years we do dip, some years we don't dip. Some years we use a overhead application of a rooting hormone called Cytoplex and Cytokin. Sometimes it will do that through an injection into the irrigation water. It really depends on what we're noticing. If we know that everything is lining up and the stars are like perfect, and we're not having any issues with rooting, then we'll skip the dip. Otherwise, if we are having a tougher season and we're not having a lot of sunny days, and the houses are running a little cooler, then we will go ahead and dip all of the cuttings in a rooting hormone. Rooting hormone can come in several different forms. You can utilize a powder, or you can utilize a liquid. Oftentimes, rooting hormone as a liquid is something that you have to be a little more cognizant of, because you're not supposed to let the cuttings sit in that solution for too long. It's usually just a couple seconds. So just keep that in mind and do some research and, see what you think might work best for you. As your cuttings are continuing to grow, you're watering, at least on our farm or in our operation, at least once a day. If it's bright and sunny, if it's, cloudy and cool and your soil is staying consistently moist, then you could probably skip a day, here or there to make sure that you aren't waterlogging your soil. So being attentive in that regard is important. When it comes to planting out, into a bed or into a garden, there are a few things to keep in mind. It's important to remember that dahlia cuttings, we should say, are just like any other tender annual transplant. They really shouldn't be hit with a heavy frost. If they're hit with a heavy killing frost, they are going to die. If they are hit with a light frost, you'll probably see some damage on the leaf tips, but the main stem shouldn't die if it's just a light frost. With that understanding or that knowledge, that allows you to plant out rooted cuttings sooner than you can with tubers. With dahlia tubers, there's a kind of a little bit of a catch when it comes to early season production, where we kind of as an industry say to not plant your tubers until your ground is between 50 and 60 degrees. When you are planting in a cooler soil than that, with the presence of water, rain, and moisture, you're running kind of a chance of rotting the tuber. Whereas with a cutting, you are able to plant it out when your soil is a touch cooler. It can withstand and handle wetter soil conditions. And because of those things, combined with the fact that cuttings usually will produce flowers or come into flush 1 to 2 weeks sooner than dahlia tubers, plants grown from tubers, it kind of becomes a really big deal, because this utilizing and implementing dahlia cuttings into your production plan will allow you to have a longer window of dahlia production. We can kind of look at this from our perspective here on the farm. This season, we were able to get cuttings out into the field early. Very early, end of May, middle end of May, which again, I say that's early for us because that was early this year. Usually we have tubers in the ground by then. But because we had a lot of other things going on, of which you can listen them to in the previous episode, we were delayed several weeks. So cuttings went out first. And because it's what we had the manpower to do. And then after that, then tubers went out, and then we did another round of cuttings later. So our final round of cuttings, were planted, like the middle, it was in July. I know it was in July. It was kind of an amazing opportunity for us to see, how having a constant peak flush from each planting really benefited us from a production perspective. And I understand that not everyone has ample amount of room to be able to experiment and try new concepts and new things like this. However, this is not something that you would have to do on an acres and acres perspective to implement. You know, you could do this like one bed at a time or a half a bed at a time. So do like half a bed with early planted cuttings, half a bed with late planted cuttings, and then your tubers filled in throughout. I think this also has a lot of value when we take a look at the color trends and the color demands of what our clientele base is wanting, because we know that when we would traditionally or typically start to come into dahlias as a cut flower early in the season. So that would be like end of July for field grown product, where that's usually a little bit more of a lighter tone and fruity tone from a color needs perspective. So blushes, creams, pinks, tangerines, peaches, those color tones are very heavy in demand. Whereas a lot of your more richer autumnal tones are not super heavy. So your like pumpkin spice tones, your bronzy tones, your burgundies, we're usually not selling or moving a ton of those. So when we know that that color demand and that color trend is fairly consistent, then that allows us to plant and plan accordingly. So the first flush or the first round into the ground is going to facilitate that summer need. And then as our plantings move on, we're going to adjust that. So we're going to be planting more of those richer autumnal tones in round two and three, so that we have a really great supply of those when they're really truly needed. So that's a huge, huge thing that I don't see a lot of people talking about, Because I think as an from an industry perspective, we've always just handled dahlias or treated dahlias as a plant once a year crop. But there's really no reason that they have to be that solely. Because we want to make sure that we're able to continually improve the quality of the product that we're selling. And we all know that as dahlias age and the plants age throughout the season, they tend to get tired unless you're really feeding them heavily throughout the entire year, of which we don't. So we know that if we want that really beautiful first flush quality in late September, we need to plan accordingly and plant accordingly to do that. When it comes to the physical act of planting out a rooted cutting, it's very simple, very straightforward. We're going to put that into a prepared bed, and make sure that it's got plenty of water, plenty of moisture. We don't want to burn it with too heavy of a fertilizer addition, so making sure that there is nutrient present, but not too much, because you will see discoloration and leaf burn if there is a toxicity almost in your soil. The other thing to keep in mind too, and this goes for both cuttings and tuber grown plants, you really should be planting dahlias into a looser soil or a finer soil if possible. Since these are a tuber producing plant, if you're working with a very dense, heavy soil, you'll probably see that reflected in the size and style of tuber that is produced and developed. If your dahlia plant has looser soil early in the season, you'll probably see a better yield on tubers as well, because those tuber roots are the roots that plant is producing that are then going to turn into the storage vesicle that we know as a tuber. Need that loose ground and that loose texture to penetrate. Otherwise, they're going to be very, very clumpy in style if it's very dense. The other thing to keep in mind, too, is that when you go to dig your dahlias out in the fall, oftentimes with cutting-grown plants, we'll see several styles or types of tuber clumps. We'll see things that are reminiscent or resemble a traditional tuber clump, where there are fully mature, fully developed individual tubers. And we'll also see things that we would consider a pot root. So a pot root is going to look like one big, large mass of roots. And it might not have truly developed tubers. That pot root still is viable. It still has value. It still can be replanted and used again in subsequent years. It just looks different. And the reason that it looks different is because that plant, for whatever reason, of which I don't have the answer for, did not produce individual tubers. So that's just one other thing to kind of be aware of. When in regards to storage post-digging, you're going to treat these just as if they were a traditional clump grown from a mother tuber in the ground. And then you can store them as you best see fit and utilize them next season. So we did touch on a few things that I didn't go into great detail about. I do have previous episodes on storing tubers, on checking in on your tubers post or like midway through storage. We've got episodes on just general dahlia culture. I've got an episode on my favorite dahlia varieties. So all of those can be found. All of that information is there for you. Might be of some benefit if you are new to the crop or might just need a different perspective or to learn and see how someone else does it. So all of that information is there for you if you would like to use it. So that was the entire process of dahlia cuttings, really from beginning to end. It really is step-by-step how we do it here on the farm. And I hope that was beneficial for you. If you've never worked with dahlia cuttings, I would encourage you to give it a shot. whether trying it on your own or purchasing rooted cuttings and having them shipped to you. If you are needing a large volume of dahlia cuttings, you are able to get those, some varieties, through your preferred plug brokers, whether that be Leo Burby Young Plants or Farmer Bailey or through the Ball Network or one of the many others, Inflor, which is an express seed company. They all have a nice selection of dahlia varieties that are traditionally used for cut flower production. Many of those are going to be within the Karma series. So if you're looking for something a little more unique or something that might not be readily available on a large scale, then you'll be working usually or typically with smaller growing operations like ourselves. We have our full production lineup of varieties that we grow for cuttings on our website. That can be shipped to you in the spring. If you're listening to this in the far, far future, a fun thing to keep in mind is that our website typically opens for spring shipped material in October. So if there's a variety that you're on the hunt for that you think we might have, you'll definitely want to check the website in the beginning of October. Otherwise, you can purchase at any point in time. During the checkout process, it'll ask you several questions as far as when you would like these to be shipped, and then we will take care of that on the back end. So everything is custom grown here, so what you order is your reservation, and then we grow it specific for the needs of that shipping week. So that's kind of how we handle that. There are many other small farms that are growing into the cutting industry, so we will see some boom in that as well. Another really great farm that does have a really lovely selection and the people are delightful as well is Goose Creek Gardens in Pennsylvania, so definitely want to support them as well. They've got a really, really lovely family, really lovely story, and they're actually one of the upcoming episodes that we recorded over the winter that I'll be sharing as well. So with all of that, I just want to thank you for being here. As always, I hope that this was helpful in some regard. I hope you're able to learn and utilize some of our experience to make your experience and your process and your time easier, better, more enjoyable, whatever the case might be for you. So next episode, I think, is going to be on the topic of fundraisers and how I believe that that is a market that many of us are not tapped into or aware of. And I'm excited to share some thoughts on that as well. So have a great day. I will talk to you soon, and we'll catch you later. Bye.